Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Mixed Martial Arts Hour with...
The Mixed Martial Arts Hour is back in your life on this Monday, February 20th, 2023. Hello again, everyone. I sure hope you're doing well. And yes, to address the elephant in the room, I just got a haircut. Hope you guys like it. It's nice, high, and tight. The other elephant in the room, of course, is that we're not in our studio. We're not in our New York City studio. I'm actually in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. GC is not in his usual spot in the control room. EJ is in his usual spot on Wednesdays, not Mondays. It's a whole confusing situation. Serious Frank is here as well, but you probably won't hear from him. I'm still in Montreal because I was here this weekend for something called Le Illumination Chamber. It was a great time. I'm going to talk all about my weekend. There was a lot of drama. It was a lot of fun. I can't wait to tell you all about it. But we're here on President's Day, July 4th, we did this. This is just the second time, I think, in the history of the MMA Hour. Actually, the third. We did one in August of 2010. It was right before UFC 117. MC Hammer was on the program. I may have said this back in July as well when we did the July 4th show after the Izzy Cannonier card. In any event, we're doing it again here because I'm in Montreal, but we'll be back in the normal spot on Wednesday. All right? Hope you're okay with all of that. On today's program, we're just going to recap the weekend. No guests other than, of course, GC, New York Rick, Mysterious Frank, somewhere, you know, in the atmosphere. We'll recap the weekend. We'll talk about the news and notes. We'll recap my weekend. It was a memorable one, one for the scrapbook. I look forward to hanging out and talking about it all. And as always, we are presented by our good friends over at DraftKings Sportsbook. They are the official sports betting partner of not only the UFC, but this program as well. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today if you haven't already. And to be honest, I feel like everyone has at this point, especially if you listen to this show. But in any event, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today. Use the code THEMMAHOUR for a special offer when you sign up. Again, that's code THEMMAHOUR. That lets them know we sent you. Gentlemen, how are you? New York Rick, you doing well?
I'm great. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. I'm actually at my in-laws' house, if I'm being honest, if I could break the fourth wall. And, well, GC, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good, man.
Coming live.
I appreciate you breaking the fourth wall and admitting you're at your in-laws' house.
I mean, what else am I going to say, right? I'm not in the studio. You're at Del Boca Vista, right?
Yeah, Del Boca Vista. Still don't get it. Second time you laid the joke out there, still don't get it.
There are people out there who are popping for this joke. Del Boca Vista is where George Costanza's parents lived in Boca Raton. Now, I know you're not necessarily in Boca Raton, but it's like, you know,
not in Boca Raton.
An old age home. And then Jerry Seinfeld's parents found out about this and they decided to move as well. And then, no, actually, you know what? I screwed that up. Seinfeld's parents lived in El Boca Vista. George's parents found out about it, called up Seinfeld's parents, and said, "This is Frank Costanza. We're moving in lock, stock, and barrel. We're going to be in the pool. We're going to be in the clubhouse. We're going to be all over that shuffleboard court, and I dare you to keep us out." Does this ring a bell?
Nah, I haven't seen the episode, but what you're describing is similar to where
there's a shuffleboard court.
Yeah, there's a pool. There's everything.
Anyway, if I could break the fourth wall, I'm at my in-laws' house. I've known my wife since we were 12, and so like this is where I would come over when she was a kid, you know, like in high school and stuff like that. And now here I am doing this critically acclaimed program from the spot. Who would have thought, right? Who would have thought? It's all coming together. So I just wanted to share that with all of you. I thought that you would appreciate it. But appreciate everyone who is joining us on this wacky President's Day. By the way, can anyone – I feel like this is a question for Frank. What is President's Day? What are we celebrating today? Anyone?
Yeah, I think we're just going to have to wait on the incoming Slack.
Birthdays. There it is. Okay, Frank can only birthdays. Do this. What are we doing? Thanks, everyone was born on this day? Is that what happened?
No, I think there's like I think it's like Abe Lincoln's near here. I think George Washington's near here. Yeah, they're all close to this
Frank's
day.
Presence sorely missed on this Monday. A relatively quiet weekend, gents. He's asking if they, you know what, when I became a citizen, they made us answer a bunch of questions. None of them pertain to President's Day, to be honest. So I'm a little bit ashamed. This is actually my first President's Day as an American citizen. How about that? It's a big one for me. Yeah, so I'm happy that I'm spending it with you guys. Yeah, it's massive. It's massive. So like I said, I'm in Montreal for Elimination Chamber. Not sure if you guys saw on the internet, but I was doing some stuff over here for this massive, massive event. I'm going to spare you the details for now because the word MMA is in our title and people get very protective over that term. So let's start with some mixed martial arts if we can. Let's talk about the weekend and let's talk about, I mean, an incredible breakout performance from Erin Blanchfield that I think, you know, we all thought that she was in the talk at 125, like she was in that picture, she was in the mix, so to speak. But I think, and I certainly was in this category as well, when they announced that Jessica Andrade was taking this fight on a week's notice against Erin Blanchfield after Tyler Santos pulled out, I think most people thought, and correct me if you guys feel otherwise, that, hey, shout out to Erin Blanchfield for taking this fight against Jessica Andrade on a week's notice. Like, you're going from a tough opponent to arguably a tougher opponent. In the end, it's like, yo, Jessica Andrade made the mistake. She took the risk here because that was an unbelievable performance. A second round submission win over a very tough former champion, and it never really looked close. Like, it looked like there were levels and she was a level above. And now all of a sudden she's very much in the mix. Now we could talk about what this win means, where she goes from here and whatnot. But Nurkic, let me start with you. What did you make of Erin Blanchfield's performance? And quite frankly, were you shocked that she looked that dominant against Andrade?
I wouldn't say I was shocked. Because as you said, like, a lot of us have pegged her as the future of this division. A lot of us have kind of earmarked Erin Blanchfield is going to be a player in this division at some point. I just don't think we knew. I'm speaking for myself here because I don't think it's fair to speak for everybody. I didn't think it would happen this quick. It's happened very, very quickly. A win over a fighter as highly ranked and as capable and has the championship medal of Jessica Andrade means a lot to me. I want to give Erin Blanchfield all her flowers. She won the striking. She won the grappling. She did everything she needed to do. You can only fight the opponent in front of you that night. And Erin Blanchfield absolutely dominated. I do want to point out, though, that I don't think this was Jessica Andrade's best performance. I thought she just looked off. She looked a little bit sloppy. She just didn't look prepared. And that's what happens when you take a fight on a week's notice. Now, to talk about the other side of that coin, Erin Blanchfield only had a week as well. So it's apples to apples. They both only had a week to prepare. And when the chips hit the table, Erin Blanchfield was the one who absolutely came out and smoked her and dominated. So to me, incredibly impressive performance. I'm ready to put her in that title conversation right now. I'm ready to say if she's up there with Alexa Grasso or Valentina Shevchenko, no issues with it. She looks fully capable, taking a big step up and acing the test. Flying colors for her.
What do you think, GC?
I mean, the most impressive thing for me was the performance on the feet. Like I kept saying all week, you know, I picked on Drajan and I was wrong. And I kept saying all week, you know, imagine if we get to the second round and Andrade has stuffed all of Aaron Blanchfield's takedowns. What is this fight going to look like? I thought it was going to be one-way traffic for Andrade. I think I literally said that on this show. I was dead wrong. She didn't get any takedowns in the first round. Andrade successfully stuffed them all, and Blanchfield hung in with her, toe-to-toe with her on the feet. You know, she, some may argue that she had more success than her in the first round. And then to get to the second round and just to be able to finish her like that was just, it's just such an outstanding performance for how young she is and how new she is to the division. And, you know, what Frank said, the short notice thing, sure, you know, Andrade fought just a few weeks ago.
Mirkrik.
What did I just say?
You said Frank. I was like, there is no way Frank said anything about any of this.
Sorry, you know, sleep has not been a big thing for me over the last couple nights.
No, it's so true. I just didn't want to give him too much credit.
No. I appreciate y'all catching me there. Frank, I almost called him Frank again, man. Something's going on here. New York Rick's face, yeah, threw me off. What New York Rick said about Andrade stepping in on short notice, I mean, yes, it probably wasn't her best performance, and she did fight a few weeks ago, but to be able to just smoke her the way she did was incredibly impressive for Blanchfield. And as far as the title shot, if Valentina goes in there and takes care of Alexa Grasso, I don't see why you don't just give Blanchfield the title shot at this point, because if she has to fight a Tyler Santos, then what was the point of her even taking this Andrade fight?
I couldn't agree more. And by the way, you mentioned her age, just 23 years young, and it feels like her ceiling is much higher than this. You're right about the striking. We all knew about the grappling. It was on display against Molly McCann back in November. Obviously, it was on display yesterday as well. But that's how we were kind of first introduced to her. She's very unassuming, right? Like, she doesn't necessarily look like a killer. She doesn't act like a killer. She's not like tough and mean. She's actually very soft-spoken and quiet. But she is freaking incredible. And now to touch on the title shot stuff, yes, March 4th, we are getting Alexa Grasso versus Valentina Shevchenko. Alexa Grasso has improved tremendously over the last couple of years. Alexa Grasso was the type of person that we were talking about 5, 6, 7 years ago as a potential, you know, title contender, potential superstar. Took her a while to really come into her own, but there's something going on with Mexican MMA right now with the likes of Brandon Moreno, with Yair Rodriguez, with her. So it feels like maybe there's some momentum there. And we still don't really know. It's funny because, like, to me, the bigger question going into that fight is, who is Valentina Shevchenko now? Was the Tyler Santos fight an anomaly, or is she now, you know, experiencing what everyone does at some point, father time? You start to decline. Was the Tyler Santos fight just a bad matchup, or is she starting to decline? Was she lacking motivation? Was it Singapore? Was it the fact the time difference? Blah, 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 blah. So let's see. But Grasso isn't the type of fighter that historically Shevchenko has had trouble with over the last couple of years, right? The round against Jennifer Maya, the Santos fight. Grasso's going to want to stand and trade with her. And that's, you know, Valentina's game. That's her bread and butter. If Valentina wins and she faces Aaron Blanchfield, this is not a good matchup. This is maybe her worst matchup since becoming champion at 125, her toughest matchup since and it's a fight that I want to see. And so, it's okay. Like, I saw some people yesterday lamenting the fact that the Grasso fight is happening. Oh, just cancel it and do Blanchfield on March 4th. First of all, you know, that's very disrespectful and mean. Grasso could very well win that fight. But second of all, it's happening in 2 weeks. So it's not like we're going to get, you know, an answer in 3-4 months. We're going to know who's going to win this fight. Where it gets tricky, where it gets messy, is if Grasso pulls off the upset. Because you guys tell me if you feel otherwise. If Grasso pulls off the upset, you have to run it back, right? Like, Shevchenko deserves that respect. No? Nyerkrik, no? You can't? Well,
I think you have to. I'm with you, Ariel. I think you have to for how long she's held the belt.
I'm kind of – I don't think every single title loss has to be a rematch. I really don't.
But isn't there like a level of respect that, okay, you've been around, you've been the champ.
No.
You made that title. Really, like, she made that title.
We talk all the time about – how stale the divisions get, how held up the divisions get. This is more of that. This is just more of, okay, now we have to do, okay, what happens when Valentina wins the second one? Now we do the third one? I'm done.
I suppose that's true. It's
enough
for Sarah and GSP, right? Sarah beat him the first time, GSP beat him the second, and then they moved on. By the way, I always thought that they should have done the third one, but they never did. It was never even under consideration.
Now we're sitting around waiting for Amanda and Pena. Like, I don't need to see these. I don't need to, if Alexa Grasso goes there and puts on a performance that is worthy of championship gold, of holding the UFC title, and beats Valentina Shevchenko, give her Blanchfield, and then maybe Valentina wins one more and gets back there. I'm fine with it. Would I be up in arms about it if Valentina, a long reigning champion, gets another crack at it? No, I'd be fine with it. But do I need to? I don't. I really don't. I think these divisions need to start moving. I'm sick of the championship rematches.
Wow.
I'm sick of divisions being held up. Let's just keep moving. And to be honest, I don't think Erin Blanchfield is going to win that fight. I'm okay with her getting a title shot because I think she's earned it, and especially if you beat Jessica Andrade. But I think it is too early. I don't think she's a finished product, and I don't think that she's going to go in there and be the favorite against either of those fighters. So let her get a crack at it. But I don't think she's going to win it.
Wait.
I think she still has a lot to go.
And if Erin Blanchfield fights Valentina, Valentina's winning.
Yeah.
And you think if Erin Blanchfield fights Alexa Grasso, Grasso's winning?
Yeah.
Wow. I do.
Oh wow! You think Grasso beats Blanchfield?
Really? I think
interesting.
For the same reason we talked about Grasso as a prospect early on, she needed more time, and this fast rise works for Erin Blanchfield in her favor because now she gets to that title opportunity quicker. But she just doesn't have enough fights, in my opinion. The performance against Andrade was very impressive, but she's coming from fighting Molly McCann right before that. Like, she hasn't had enough time in this division against top competition, in my opinion, to get the seasoning that you need to beat somebody like Valentina Shevchenko. And quite frankly, even somebody like Alexa Grasso. Would my mind be blown if Erin Blanchfield went in there, used her grappling, and was able to effectively beat either of them? It would not. I'm not going to pretend that it's like this major upset and be shocked. But there is something to the idea of getting reps. Like, we just don't see champions as young as John Jones was anymore. Because the UFC is so good, and the level of competition is so good, and the champions are so good. You kind of need these fights. You need these fights. And I think Erin Blanchfield needs more of these fights. But I also, just moments ago, said I would be okay with her getting a title shot because I don't think you have to win the title in your first shot. Sometimes you get one, you rebuild, and you get another one. I'm perfectly fine with her. I think she earned it with a win over Jessica Andrade. But I don't think she'd be the favorite. But you're right that she has a style that could pose problems for Valentina Shevchenko, for sure. And anybody, right, quite frankly. If she strikes like that, if she grapples like that, she's going to be a problem for a lot of people.
I think against Alexa Grasso, she might be lined as the favorite. I feel like she could.
On the ground, especially, right? Super, she's superior, right?
Yeah, if not beat Alexa Grasso. I mean, the Valentina fight, though, that's a different story. I mean, it feels like everyone has ushered in Erin Blanchfield as the next champion at 125. If you scroll on Twitter last night, you know, I'm seeing Valentina's days are numbered. It's over for her. It's a wrap. I think this fight with Alexa Grasso is going to be telling. If she comes out and she looks like Valentina pre-Tyler Santos fight and dominates it, I think that tune will change a little bit. But I'm with Rick. I mean, maybe pump the brakes a little bit about putting the belt around her waist.
I don't know about putting the belt around her waist, but I think she's ready. I really do.
Oh, for a title shot, there's no doubt.
100%.
There's no doubt. That's not the argument that I'm making. Yeah, who I'm just saying that, like, I think a Valentina Blanchfield fight will be very close, you know, if not Valentina winning it.
By the way, I think one of the problems with flyweight is we think of everybody as prey. We think of everybody as food for Valentina Shevchenko until they show that they're not. I think Alexa Grasso suffers from that a little bit. She's really good, man.
She is really good.
She's a very well-rounded mixed martial artist and an elite striker. And I think it's just like people are automatically being like, oh, Erin Blanchfield dominates both of them. Or, yeah, she's next for Valentina. Get Grasso out of there. It's just not reality, man. Like, Erin Blanchfield had a really, really good performance against a really, really strong contender. But Alexa Grasso has been doing this for a bit, and she's earned her stripes, and she's also really good. I'm not ready for
a coronation. Okay, so here's the question then. Are we overrating this win? Should this win have a bit, not an asterisk, so to speak, but like, it was a fight on a week's notice. Now, one person was training for a fight. The other had a fight not that long ago, but wasn't training for this fight, right? So in a just perfect universe, the person who's training for the fight, I know it was a different opponent, should be the one who is looking better and in better shape and all that stuff. So are we overrating this win because it was Andrade who took the fight on 7 days notice? And as you said, didn't quite look as solid as she has in the past. Are we making too much out of this? Is this kind of fool's gold? Because we're looking at the name, but we're not considering the circumstances near Greg.
I think you personally have to, my take on that is you have to acknowledge it, but you can also recognize that something special happened there. Like, Jessica Andrade could walk in there on a week's notice and beat a very large part of that division And Aaron Blanchfield said, no, I'm not one of those people, and made it look easy. So I think you acknowledge it, but you also celebrate just like what we saw. And I think it was a special performance.
You know what's unique about this, GC? And I'll let you chime in a sec. I just want to mention, usually it's the younger upstart, somewhat underdog, unproven fighter who takes the fight on a short notice against a veteran because this is their opportunity to shock the world. Like I think of Stipe and Roy Nelson, UFC 160 in Winnipeg. Remember that? And Stipe was the unproven guy. He had not that long ago lost to Stefan Struve in England. And he gets this shot against the established Roy Nelson and he beats him rather convincingly. And now it's like, okay, Stipe has arrived. Like more often than not, it's the younger one. In this case, it was the younger one who had the fight, and it was the veteran who was like, yeah, sure, I'll take that fight. I don't know if she underestimated her. I don't know if she thought it was going to be easy, whatever. But it's very rare that the younger one has the fight, and it's the vet who takes it on short notice. Super rare, actually. Like, I can't think of many circumstances, and then it's the younger one who wins that fight as well. Usually it's like the younger one that gets the W, or takes it, stumbles. But we sit here on a Monday and say, well, props to them for taking the fight on short notice. You know, they look great in doing so, and can't wait to see them with a full training camp. So this is very, very unique what she did. You wanted to say something, GC?
Yeah, just going off of what Rick said, I mean, I'm 100% with him. I think you have to acknowledge the short notice for Andrade, but you also have to respect what Blanchfield did was incredible. You asked the question, are we overrating it? And I actually tend to lean yes, not maybe not us, but the public as a whole, just because of how many people I saw like saying that this is like, it's a wrap. She's going to be champion. There is no question, whether it's when she beats Valentina later this year or if it's in a few years, she will be a champion. Now, if you believe that before this fight, it's obviously, you know, ho hum for you and it's just supporting your argument. But if this is the fight that made you go from Aaron Blanchfield, like maybe be a contender in the flyweight division to, oh my gosh, it's cemented. She's going to be a champion by the end of 2023. I think you're overrating this win then. Like, incredible win. I'm not taking one thing away from her. Incredible win. But like, if this is the thing that made you like, oh, it's done, like she's champion, then I do think you're overrating it a bit.
Yeah. I mean, you made a very interesting point, Ariel. And I think it's a reason to kind of stop here and celebrate Jessica Andrade. Because like not a lot of people in her position with that ranking are taking 1 week notice fights to save a UFC card that really needed some damn help, and risking a title opportunity. Because let's face it, like if she won that fight, she was in a title position for flyweight, she was in a title position for strawweight. Maybe it's not the next thing, but she advances pretty quickly. So yeah, I think both sides of this, Jessica Andrade and Aaron Blanchfield, deserve a lot of credit for what they were able to bring to that fight. It felt like an important fight, and it ended up being a more important fight for Aaron Blanchfield. But credit to Jessica Andrade, because to your point, not a lot of veterans are risking it in the way she did. It's usually the youngster who's coming in and saying, I'll take that fight against anybody at any time so that they can advance themselves. So shout out to Andrade as well.
Can we also mention the fact that for the first time ever, I feel very confident in saying this, for the first time ever, women's flyweight is now the most interesting division in women's MMA. That has never been the case. It's always been the least interesting division. It's either been 135 or 115. 125 obviously is the third. Well, there's 45, but that's not a real weight class. But you know, looking at Invicta, it's 105, 115, 125, 135, 145. 125 has always been kind of like, what is this? There's one dominant champion and a bunch of people that they're just forcing into title fights. Now, all of a sudden, in my opinion, it is by far the most interesting one. It feels like there's the most amount of parity, and there's all these new faces. Some of the names, Alexa Grasso, Manon Fiorot, Tyler Santos is going to get another shot. Aaron Blanchfield, by the way, as we're doing this, and they usually come out on Tuesday with the new rankings, is number 10 in the UFC rankings, right? She's not going to be number 10 much longer. But that just shows, you know, and we've got Casey O'Neill coming up. She is also going to be someone I think she's, you know, got some room to improve as well. Viviane Araújo. You compare it to 115, it's a lot of people who have had shots, who are, you know, doesn't really feel like they're going to give Zhang Weili at the moment a tough fight. 135, you know, Amanda has fought most of them. 145 doesn't really exist. Like, do you guys agree with that? GC, do you agree that this is by far the most interesting women's weight class
not only in the UFC, but really in the world. But like, let's just talk about the UFC right now, any promotion. And it's not even close. And I don't even remember a time that this was ever like even close. That went to, like, it was like 35, 15, and then 10 steps behind was 25.
When you first threw out the argument, my initial reaction was just to jump to 115 being just as competitive. And, you know, I kind of didn't agree. But once you broke it down like that, I'm in 100% agreement. I mean, just hearing all the names, the excitement surrounding it, you obviously have the longstanding champion in Valentina Shevchenko, who will eventually get her belt taken away from her, whoever the competitor may be. You have the Casey O'Neills coming up. Yeah, I agree. I think it is far and away the most enticing division in women's MMA.
I disagree, but I think the gap is at a point that it's closed that I did not expect, to your point. But I still think the most talent and the most interesting is 115. It's just the best. It's just the best women's fighters.
You think
And I think it gets a new coat of paint now that Zhang is the champion. But to the point we were talking about earlier, both those divisions got hung up with title rematches. We don't need them all the time. Like, that's what happens. This is what happens when you let a division continue. Like, 125 got interesting because now we have contenders and now we have people fighting, and now it's not just on hold for when's the next rematch between them, who's getting the next title shot after the rematch happens. Like, this is what happens, and why I don't think that you need to have an immediate rematch for Valentina should she lose. I really don't, because this is what happens. You get fresh matchups and you get fresh blood and you get fresh contenders. But yeah, I definitely did not see this coming for 125, to your point. But for me, 115 is still the glamour division.
True or false, December 31st, 2023, Valentina Shevchenko will be the women's flyweight champion of the UFC in New York, Greg?
I'm going to say true.
Wow.
I think true.
GC?
Yeah, I'm going to say true. Wow. Because I am very biased and I have my Valentina Shevchenko future ticket. And, I preach to the high heavens that I wouldn't be taking Aaron Blanchfield plus 1,000 or whatever it was. And
can you still get that?
Yeah, it's looking like no. That number is long gone. If any books even have it still posted, right, that number will be long gone. I would imagine it would be around like a plus 300, plus 250 range. It is definitely plummeted. So yeah, out of bias, I'll say yes, Valentina Shevchenko will still be champion.
All right. So interesting times. And it's fun that she is fighting in 2 weeks. So we'll get the answer to A, how's she looking? Was it an anomaly? All that stuff. And honestly, like, I'm very curious about Grasso getting her first title shot. Finally, after all these years. I remember when she was brought in to Invicta. I remember that card the night before UFC 184, I think it was, Zingano and Ronda, right?
Yeah.
The Friday night.
That was
the one where Lorenzo was there, and it was Aldana and Grasso in LA, and they're like, this is the future right here, and it's Mexican MMA and all this stuff. And that was in 2015. It's been – actually, it was February of 2015, so it's been 8 years. That's crazy.
Right.
Jeez Louise, we are getting old. And she was so young then, and she still seems so young now.
And Aldana is also kind of there. She's on the cusp of fighting for a title soon too. So it took a while, but they got there.
All right. So that was the main event story. And unfortunately, another story on Saturday was the New Look Parlay Pals suffered a loss. What happened, GC? Tell us what happened.
It's on me. I mean, I just got to take this one on the chin. I took Jordan Wright and Zach Pauga under 2.5. Jordan Wright, 18 professional fights, had never seen a third round in his career. I guess that was bound to change at some point. But I think it was the way that we lost it that was so frustrating. Zach Pauga, I mean, Jordan Wright, if you've ever watched a Jordan Wright fight, it's usually fireworks. He usually goes in there, throws until someone goes out. Unfortunately, most of the time for him, it usually is him going out. And they come out just like that, start throwing. It seems like it's going to happen. And then Zach Pauga just was the clinch master. I mean, he was just wall and stall. He was doing some pretty good work with the elbows and everything. But yeah, it was just like anytime it felt like the fight was about to get exciting, he would grab Jordan Wright, push him up against the wall. And I believe he racked up like 9 minutes of control time without having a single takedown. I can't lie. It was one of the more frustrating bets to watch lose. You know, you guys had already done your part. You guys had cashed your legs of the parlay. So I knew I was letting it down. I also had it in another parlay. So it was just a double loser. Shout out to Zach Powell.
Yeah. Frustrating one, but it's okay. So that means New York Rick is back, right?
New York Rick is back, baby. We got him back for UFC Vegas 70. Oh, yeah. Get a nice little warm-up before UFC 285.
Big one. Not to mention also, you could also do Jake Paul and Tommy Fury, right?
That's okay. Right.
That's just,
well, we'll see.
No, I mean, it's...
Little KSW next week? A little KSW next week? Oh, look at Frank. Yeah, you can, because Frankie wants to take Jake Paul. He's the biggest problem child fan on Earth.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, Todd Duffy.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the lines will be different if he's fighting Mike Perry.
You so still wait you still see. Feel like there's a chance?
No, oh, I feel like there's a chance.
He's
until
there
in the ring.
He's already there.
Yeah, so what?
I have to say, I really like this.
Maybe there'll be a medicine ball. Who knows?
I really like this Frank slack. It feels like Frank, Mysterious Frank, has just become more mysterious because he has.
Except the problem is,
funny enough, the audio guy had the messed up microphone.
That is true. That is weird. The other problem is only three of us can appreciate the slacks. We could reference them and react to them, but everyone will be like, "What the hell are you talking about?" But yes, all right. So we can get back on track with those. And as we discussed, it does sort of feel like this is like the last kind of subpar weekend as far as UFC MMA is concerned. Before we get to the good stuff, also by the way, Bellator in Dublin.
That's right. Oh,
yeah. I think so Logan Storley.
Yep.
Versus Yamoslav.
Yes.
Yamoslav.
Yes. Since we're talking about all of this, you want to go through how the whole weekend went? And before I pass it off to you, let me say that today's program, as always.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
All right. How'd you do, GC?
All right. So the overall recap is I literally broke even. I I don't know if we've had this before, maybe one time, but it feels like such a losing week because I let down the parlay pals, one. And two, I started the night 5-0. Start out, I get the flyweight under. Wow. I mean, easiest bet in all sports at this point. It's just getting laughable. I hit another under from there. The Lee Wood fight is going on. I cashed both those. Lee Wood to get knocked down, fight to end in round 7 through 12, plus 220. I'm feeling great. We've got two legs of the parlay pals down. I've got another leg of a two leg parlay down. Like I'm feeling quite good. I'm like, oh, this feels like it's going to be one of those weeks where, you know, 5, 6, 7 units up, we start getting back in the green. We start putting thing in the rear view. Nope. Don't win another bet after that. And I end up dead even. No units won, no units lost, but it sure does feel like a losing weekend.
Oh, what just happened? You slammed the table? I
dropped my phone. I dropped my phone.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I knew the second that slipped out, that was going to sound worse, especially as I'm recapping a nil-nil weekend.
Yeah. Man, it started off as a great one. I mean, can we just talk quickly about Nottingham Forest and Man City? I mean, there I am watching with my son, who's a Man City fan. My other son, Nottingham Forest fan. And it was very tense. And let's be honest, it should have been 4-0 in the second half. I mean, they were dominating. I was at the game in August. They win 6-0. And what happens at the world-famous City Ground? Chris Wood comes on as a substitute and freaking ties it up. And the place goes apeshit. It's legit one of the most exhilarating sporting moments that I have witnessed in the last 10 years. I was going nuts. One son was going nuts. The other son was not going nuts. And the place was going crazy. And I thought, all right, now Lee Wood's going to go in there. And this is going to go down as one of the great Nottingham moments. I can't claim to be one of the great historians when it comes to Nottingham sports moments. But I would put it up there. Unfortunately, he didn't win. But you won your bet.
Shout out to Lee Wood having the Forest logo on his pants. That was fire. And he did have a good start.
Oh, legend. Like,
he had some good rounds. You could even argue that he was winning some of those rounds before he ended up getting knocked out.
I think he was winning. I think on the scorecards, he was up.
Yeah, I mean, makes sense.
Also,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say shout out to his corner, and in particular, Ben Davison, for stopping the fight when they did. And I know it was a little bit debated because, you know, how much time was left, but I don't think that matters. Same with a referee. It shouldn't matter for a ref. It shouldn't matter with a corner. If a fight needs to be stopped, it needs to be stopped. It doesn't matter if there's 5 seconds left, 6 seconds left, 10, 15, a minute, you stop the fight. And again, I'll say this a million times. I wish we would see more of this in MMA. We never see it ever mid-fight. We, you know, the only time I could really think of it mid-fight was Nick Diaz doing it with Nate Diaz, and they didn't even pay attention when he did it. He threw the towel when Nate fought Josh Thompson. I think it did happen in the early days. It happened from here, you know, like New York Rick, can you think of one? I know it's happened in between rounds.
Yeah, I think there was recent ones. Didn't like Montoya do it or somebody did it? There was
mid round.
Yeah, I think so. I think there was. I can't recall off the top of my head.
Definitely, it's happened not that many times, but it's happened in between rounds, mid fight, mid round. Very rarely happens. Happens all the time in boxing, and so, you know, takes a lot of chutzpah to do that. And
I think the optics of it are what hurts it, because he beats the count, right? Because it's like the fight is about to restart and then the towel comes in. If he had thrown the towel in before the count was even over, I don't think anybody even be talking about it, because that was a gnarly knockdown. Like, I don't even think there'd be much of a discussion.
You didn't like the call?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying optically, right? He beats the count and then the towel comes in, right? So now the fighter and the public is thinking like, oh, he was ready to fight. He had his faculties to him just because he beat the count, which I don't agree is necessarily the determining factor. But if that towel came in when he's on the canvas and they don't wait to see if he beats the count, then I think nobody's even talking about it, because he got rocked. He got absolutely leveled. But I think the optics of it are a little bit weird. But to your point, like, I got no problem with a corner saying, let's fight another day. I think that is something that a corner should be doing more. And I have no issue with it. I'm sure the fighter, you know, we've seen it before, right? Deontay Wilder didn't love that corner, that towel coming in from Mark Breland. Like, we've seen this before. We've seen what happens sometimes with that relationship. But I've personally got no problem with it as an outsider. I'm not the fighter, right? I'm not in there. I'm okay with a corner making that call to fight another day.
You're going to say something, GC?
Yeah, I'm just I have to agree with Rick. I mean, he really did get leveled. He was out. I don't know what he would have had to offer after that. What I did have to say was back on the UFC, and it was just about William Knight's performance, which was, I mean, if you watched the card last night, I mean, William Knight comes in there, light heavyweight.
You mean Saturday night?
Saturday night. Definitely Monday. And comes in there, big as can be, looking just like, you talk about looking good off the bus. He looked absolutely phenomenal. He's pounding his chest. He's looking like he's ready to go. And then he throws eight strikes over, or he lands eight strikes over 15 minutes. I think his round by round was like three strikes, four strikes, one strikes. And he let Marcin Prodnio land 68 leg kicks. 63 leg kicks. It was one of the all time, like, I just like do nothing performances I have witnessed.
Yeah. Overall, I mean, it was a pretty forgettable card other than the main event. I mean, the Mayra Buena Silva, what?
I'm agreeing with you. Yes, it was an,
I think he's laughing because that's an understatement.
One of the most forgettable cards I've ever watched in 10 months. I won't even remember one single of these fights happened except the main event.
There have been worse, because I think the performance in the main event was so impressive that it will. I mean, there's been some bad, you know, like the Norma Dumont, Aspen Ladd cards of the world.
I think that'll always be the top echelon.
Yeah.
But like, this will have impact on title implications. So.
Exactly. But it's because of they don't. Remember was it this weekend? Yeah. This was the card that was supposed to be headlined by Chito and Corey Sanhagen.
Once that was removed, we could have just scrapped this card. Let's just move
this
on.
We could have combined this card and next week's card and had a pretty decent card.
You couldn't do that. You know why? Because there's ESPN. A certain number that they have to hit to get their money from ESPN. They have to hit these numbers. So this and as New York Rick has said a million times, as long as ESPN is okay with this. This is going to continue, and Dave Shaw already said it.
As long as the fans are also okay with it, and they're okay. They're still tuning in, and then ESPN gets the message, okay, the fans are still going to tune in for these fight night cards, even if we put them at 10 p.m. Eastern time with Derek Lewis in the main event. The fans continue to tune in. ESPN then says, okay, we don't care what UFC is giving us as long as the fans continue to tune in, and it's just never-ending cycle of really,
the one thing
really
I would love,
weak cards.
Yes, but the one thing I would love, and I've never been the guy to be like, oh, they should say this at the press conference, they should ask this question. But I wish someone would ask in some sort of way, why? What is the reason you succeeded, you grew, you evolved, you expanded, doing 43 or so shows for the last few years all over the world? What is the reason for continuing to do Apex shows? We know the reason. They realize that they're saving a ton of money. They don't have to sell tickets. They don't have to worry. They could put on these very subpar, lukewarm, mid, as the kids like to say, to be kind, cards. But just tell us. Can you just tell us? Because you can no longer hide behind the pandemic, which is, you know, obviously the great irony in all of this, because they were the ones saying that we need to come out and blah, blah, blah. So tell us, what is the reason why you're doing this? Why is this okay? Why is no one else doing sports like they were doing it in 2020, except for you guys? Why are you still doing it? Is it because you realize that you can make a lot of money and save a lot of money, whatever? Then please tell us, because they've yet to do that. And unless you guys have heard someone say that, no one has yet to say that.
I thought Dave Shaw said that.
Did he say that?
Maybe I'm... I think he said that in the post-fight, or alluded to something to that effect. Yeah. But either way, I think your point is fair. Like, don't get me wrong. I agree with your point. I think it's fair.
And by the way, it should come from Dana, not Dave Shaw, to be honest.
I agree with that. But yeah, I mean, we all know the answer. It's the money. There's no reason if the fans are voting with their dollars and saying we like this fight card that we just saw on Saturday night, they're gonna keep giving it to you. They're just gonna keep giving it to you.
If I'm a top level fighter at this point, I'm just saying no to one of these cards. I'm absolutely saying no to one of these cards. You know, like, I'm not.
I mean, enough. There's some fighters who want that. Who don't want the pressure. Now you're talking like pay-per-view headliners. Yeah, of course.
No, no, you don't no. Like, if that. I'm a Cheeto, I'm like, no way, man. Like, put me in a crowd.
Yeah, but he's a performer, right? There are probably some fighters. I mean, Kevin Holland spoke about it. He loves the Apex. You know, like, how's there's something.
How would a guy like him, who is such a performer, love the Apex? What the hell?
Well, I think maybe it's a little bit of sentimentality, right? Like, he cut his teeth there, he made his bones there, and got it. But there's some fighters who I think will appreciate the closed atmosphere. If you're not good at handling the crowd, if you're not good at handling that pressure,
yeah,
there's probably some fighters who appreciate it. But yes, like, if you're Chito Vera, a showman of all showmen, and want to be in front of a raucous crowd, and you see him putting his San Antonio jerseys on every week and doing all these different things, like, he wants that atmosphere. If you're that person, then yeah, this is not the environment for that. I think there are some fighters who do want that, though. It's low stakes, yeah, right? It's lower pressure.
Tough fighters, but not, you know?
Yeah. But yes, it's cost saving. There's no, we can stop pretending here.
Speaking of the Ultimate Fighter, there's only other like two pieces of news that has happened since we last spoke. To be honest, it's been a pretty quiet last few days. One of them is this story regarding the Ultimate Fighter and Conor McGregor. I heard about this on Wednesday. Or maybe, no, it was Wednesday night, where you've heard about this, I'm sure, New York Rick.
Yeah.
Where apparently three fighters were taken off the show because Conor came in with his own set of fighters and said, like, I want these guys on the show. And then three fighters had to, get removed. And I was told that they were, you know, out and about, PI, Apex, very upset, very sad about all this. That story continued on Friday when our old friend Danny Rubenstein, manager to the Stars, took to Twitter. I love that term, took to Twitter, as opposed to just tweet it. the man in the hat, Chuck Mendenhall, loves that term as well, and said that Ken Cross, Mitch Ramirez, and Brandon Jenkins all got pulled off to make room for three of Conor's guys to be on the show. This was in response to a tweet regarding all of this. And then Chris Curtis, and
Chris Curtis,
Gilbert Burns, yeah, spoke about it on Twitter or tweeted about it. And Curtis even said that the rumor was, quote unquote, definitely true, which prompted McGregor to respond to Curtis in a tweet that he later deleted. I'm not sure why. And what he wrote at the time was, not true. I only know one guy on this show, and he put himself forward for it. And he is now, after today, set to fight the number one seed. I didn't ask nor request nothing, and I certainly didn't have people removed. I'm just trying to get back in the mix myself, so fuck off. So, yeah. I don't know. I guess all this, you know, if in fact this is all captured as part of the show, I guess this is all very good for the show, because it's just getting people talking, you know, what is it, 3 months before it's going to air on ESPN.
I was just going to say, this is all academic at this point, because at some point the cast list is going to come out, and at some point we're going to know, did three guys get dumped for guys that were affiliated with Conor McGregor?
Well, how would we know if we didn't know what the original list was?
Well, because when that cast list comes out, we'll know who's on the cast and who's not on the cast. Now the people who are not, sure, on the cast can be, yeah, like, yeah, I was one of the people who was on the cast and now I'm not. It will be the secrecy.
By the way, this is
only because of the taping of it. Once this is out, there, sure, will be no ambiguity.
You know what I would have done? I think this is a big miss. Now, I don't know how it all played out, how they handled it. If in fact they were recording all this and there was, I guess, 16 guys, and Conor comes in and says, I want my three, yeah, guys, I would have done a mini tournament right there. I would have said, like, all right, we're at a standstill here.
Your spot.
Conor, you want your guys? These three guys here are going to be coached by Michael Chandler. We're just going to do a mini tournament before the show starts, and we're going to figure out which three guys are going to move on, right? Wouldn't that be high drama?
I love it.
On Wednesday, you guys have to weigh in. On Thursday, we're going to have three fights. And these guys, now you want these guys bad? And you want these guys out? Because I don't know how they picked the three guys, yeah, that were removed. If in fact they were removed, if there's any truth to this whatsoever, which, by the way, we should note, Conor is saying that there is no truth, but there are multiple people saying that it's true. If in fact this was true, if they would have done like a mini tournament, that would have been a fire way to start the whole damn thing. A little drama. Chandler is now like, guys, you got to fight for your spot. I think it would have been incredible. Who knows? Maybe they did it.
Yeah.
I was going to say, maybe we don't know. Maybe they did do it.
Maybe they did do it. Also, I'm just like, I'm having trouble getting upset about the guy who this entire show is built around picking his three guys and that not being okay. Like,
if it's not Conor McGregor, like no one's even batting an eye.
This is a Conor McGregor production at this point. Like, if he picks his three guys, God bless. I'm okay with it.
By the way, that actually would have been a good gimmick too. Let him come to freaking Vegas with eight dudes on his jet and be like, this is my fucking team, all right? I'm picking the team
this time, all right? You know for a fact that that's what somebody like Nate Diaz would have done as well, right? Nate Diaz would have rolled up with all his guys and been like, these are the dudes that are on the show. I don't care who you cast. And
actually makes it better because he has a connection to them.
Now, look, I think we have to not be so callous to the people that lost their opportunity on Tough. Right. Like if there are truly people who lost their opportunity on Tough, I'm not like trying to spit in their face. Like I feel bad that they didn't.
Of course.
Hopefully there can be a make good. Maybe if this is actually played out the way it played out, maybe they get a shot on Contender Series or maybe they get a contract on a short notice thing, whatever that is. Hopefully there's a make good if they did indeed lose their spot. But yeah, I can't get too mad about Conor McGregor, the one who is reviving this entire franchise, picking three guys. If he did, I really can't get mad about that.
So we'll see how that all plays out. The other big thing since we last spoke on Wednesday was, I guess, more of this IV drama. And the only two little notes that I want to bring up is, you know, so number one, Ali Abdelaziz, who's the manager of Islam Makhachev, comes out with this tweet and is like, hey, you dummies, just so you know, you can actually take 2 to 3 liters before the fight and you very clearly cannot. USADA has reminded us all that back in 2019, by the way, a little bit weird that they amended the rules. And like, to me, I feel like you amend a rule, you should make some sort of public announcement. Yeah. You know, like they just kind of slid that in there. It's almost like going back and editing something. Like, when did you actually change this? If there's no actual proof or announcement of you changing it, when in fact did you guys change this? It's so weird. This whole USADA thing is so weird. Like how these rules just continue to change. Oh, like we're sitting here. Clearly, CKB team has no idea that this was a rule change, right? Because they're all out, you know, upset over all this. But it, apparently in 2019, they changed that, you know, you could take, what is it, 100 milliliters every 12 hours if administered by a professional, blah, blah, blah.
So let me say a few things. One, I think you're right about the... It feels like maybe they did, and it's like a terms and condition thing where like everybody just glossed over it and nobody read it. And, you know, Dylan Danis with NFTs, whatever it is. So there's that. And then there's the, I think there's also still currently some confusion around what those rules were kind of saying, which is that over the course of 12 hours, you can take 100 milliliters of fluid. But I don't think that that is... And somebody who knows this better than me can correct me. I think that that's only, you don't need that to be administered by a professional. You can go above that 100 milliliter.
Okay.
You can go above that limit and take more if it is administered by a professional. Those are two separate instances of where you are allowed to take an IV, which is 100 milliliters, cool, over the course of 12 hours. If above that, deemed medically necessary and administered by a professional, that can be done as well and is legal. But to your point, this is all confusing. And if you're Alexander Volkanovsky, who's a champion of the UFC, fighting to be a double champion, this is something that guy should probably be informed of or know, or everybody else on the roster should probably be aware of. So it's a mess. It's a mess. But I do believe...
Are they changing the rules and not telling them? Like, what is going on?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
And by the way, why did they change the rules, right? Because they have often changed things as a result of something happening, right? Like they get passes.
We've also seen people suspended for IV use or not suspended. Maybe suspended, actually. I don't remember. I think BJ Penn had an IV situation. There was a few fighters.
Also, I still don't even understand why it's illegal, to be honest. If it's just to rehydrate, if it's to mask something else, then yes. Point is... Ali comes out and says 2 to 3 liters, which is wrong, and then deletes it. 2 to 3 liters, by the way, is 2,000 to 3,000 milliliters, and then deletes it. But the best part is he was like so confident in his tweet. He's like, I'm going to show you guys, and then deletes it. I don't know if he was just wrong or he was incriminating himself. Who the hell knows? Later on, Jeff Nowitzki is talking to Brendan Fitzgerald on some podcast or something. I'm not really sure what that was.
I think it might have been Brendan's show. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Fitz Nation. Something.
Shout
like
out. And is like, yeah, you know, the Australian Commission came out and they had to blood test all the non-Australian fighters. Like, what is all this shit? Like, what?
Yeah.
This is all very weird. And clearly,
well,
Volk had no idea about any of this.
In between there, the Australian Commission issued a statement saying there was no conclusive evidence, right? That there was no conclusive evidence that they've been presented that somebody cheated. So that was one additional domino. Then, yes, Nowitzki in this interview is saying, like, Australian Commission said that, so trust them on that.
Cool.
And then also, the non-Australian fighters got blood tested. So, like, that's why, I guess the implication, right, is Volkanovski's team may not know why Islam Makhachev had a mark on his arm that many people online were talking about conspiracy theories to say that they were blood tested and that, and that's where the potential bruising on the arm could come from. But again, this is all kind of like not clear, shadowy,
happening,
like nobody's kind of understanding.
Also, what's up what's happening? The Australian fighters not getting blood tested, and the, like, what is that all about?
I don't know. Maybe it wasn't related to competition, right? It was something about their travel. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
Here's the thing, though. Here's the bottom line. At this point, I think that the team, and Volk has only said the one thing on this show in passing before all of this started. And again, Eugene, which I knew was going to happen, people still said that he was complaining. Like, I asked him the question at the very, very end. I think they just have to let it go at this point, right? Like, you can't, I don't know. It just, it's not Volk's style.
Feels like nothing's going to happen.
Well, I think it's fair to say, what is their argument, right? Like, what has happened that they can deem was
clearly
was
they have some sort of information.
Illegal cheating. Or
by
cheating.
The way, the other thing that isn't brought up, Zubaira Tahugov is on that team. And so it is possible, which I think Eugene alluded to this.
Eugene suggested that.
He had
that,
trouble making weight, obviously. So, you know, is it a case of...
He suggested there's more than one person in that room, right? We don't know what's happening in that room unless somebody tells us what's happening in that room and shows us what's happening in that room. But yeah, I mean, without, like, as we said when Dan Hooker made his very, very first tweets, it's up to them to prove it. They need to prove that something happened. They need to show us that something happened. And they have not been able to do that as of yet. So unless they can do that, I think you have to move
and
on.
And speak.
But that, to me, like, that's still a great fight. Like, why?
It's
like,
fine. You know what this is going to be? This IV stuff, this is going to be BJ Penn, GSP, UFC 94 with the greasing.
The greasing.
It was a thing that happened in the aftermath. Yeah. People got all up in arms. And, of course, that fight wasn't as close as this fight, but still. And then we all kind of moved on and forgot about it. I do think, though...
I will neither confirm nor deny how much I believed that at the time.
You freaking mark. I will say, though, the more I sort of chew on this and talk to people, I'd be very, very surprised if they run this one back right away, only because of the timing. You've got Ramadan coming up. I don't think we see Islam until later on in the year, summertime later on because of Ramadan, which is, you know, in a couple months. That's 1 month, and you got to get back on track. Volk wants to stay busy. He likes to fight three or so times a year. He's got Yair waiting there. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Volk in May or June or something like that, and that wouldn't work out. So I think that the timing doesn't work out. He takes this fight and then, you know, revisits, and I still don't understand why Beneil Dariush is fighting Charles Oliveira. It's still a great fight. I just think that he could take the title shot now. I would be very, very surprised if A, they get this one in before Ramadan because they've already set their schedule, and B, if both men, actually, maybe not for Islam, but if Volk's next fight is against Islam Makhachev, I would be very, very surprised of that. But we'll see. We'll see. Let me tell you guys about my weekend since we've been talking all this time here and I've got some stories to share. This has been an incredible weekend. And I often in my career use the term surreal, but this is up there. I mean, I've been talking about Elimination Chamber. I've been talking about Montreal. And just so you all know, like, for the most part, I wasn't kayfabing. By Wednesday of last week, I kind of knew that I was coming. But prior to that, I wasn't like lying to all of you. I really didn't. It really all started. So I'm at Royal Rumble
And that was incredible. Sami Zayn hits Roman Reigns with the chair. It was an unbelievable moment. And now it's like, wow, Montreal, they're going to... And then the next week on SmackDown, it's going down to Montreal. And I'm sitting there and I had no plans at that point to come. And I was like, man, I really feel like I need to be there. Like, I've been at, you know, all the big GSP fights in Montreal. It's my city. I haven't been here in a while. This is great. This is great. So I was at the Survivor Series. I was at this. I was at that. So I just tweeted out, like, man, I really feel like I need to be there. Yes.
Can I just ask a question about Montreal? Like, have they been back, or was this the first time they've been back in a long time? Like, did
they've
they do
done
smaller
house
shows
and Raw and SmackDowns, but the last pay per view that was here,
but
was,
not the pay per view
live event as they call it now, was 2009.
Okay,
there's
so
only
it's been a
three
long time for like the
pay per views, premium live events here. It was Survivor Series '97, No Way Out 2003. Of course, GC remembers this one. I think it's one of your favorite matchups. The Rock and Hogan 2, one of the big ones. And the
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, if you didn't say it, I was going to have
the rematch.
So, I mean, 03.
Icon versus Icon. Are you kidding me? And then 2009 Breaking Point. So this was the fourth. And so I tweet that, and that's that. Then a few days later, and you know, I'll tell you the majority of it. I get a text like, you know, are you coming to Elimination Chamber? Do you want to do this then? I was like, man, I was thinking about it. I actually even had an idea for something. And all right. The idea was that I would write an essay about what this means to Montreal, because I don't think that anyone who isn't from Montreal could properly verbalize what this means to us or what this meant to us. Even the great WWE packages that they do, I don't those would be just about Roman and Sammy, but I wanted to explain to people why this meant so much to us. Because just a quick history lesson, you know, Montreal was forever the crown jewel, pardon the pun, of Canada for several years, the 60s, 70s. Like, we had Expo 67, we had the 76 Summer Olympic Games, we got the Expos first, the Canadians were on top. And then because of politics and economy and all this stuff, we actually went below Toronto. And then, you know, in the last, I don't know, 15 or so years, we went below Vancouver as well. And so Montreal has kind of been forgotten about. Like, look at the World Cup. We weren't even consideration to host any of that. You know, it was Vancouver, Toronto, Edmonton was in consideration for the World Cup in 2026. So, you know, it has felt for a while like Montreal has been forgotten about and no longer the apple of Canada's eye. So that was a big deal. Also, Canadian wrestling has always been a big deal, but it's very rarely been one of our own at the top, right? Like the GSP days, it's very rarely been one of our guys. It's been a Canadian at the top or just a big event with Hogan, Rock, whatever, but not one of our own. Sami Zayn, one of our own. He's from NDG. He's from 15 minutes away from the Bell Center. One of our own, this guy who was skinny, who didn't look the part, along with Kevin Owens, like, you know, made a name for themselves here in Montreal, local shows, competing, you know, against each other in front of 100 people and bars and all this stuff. So it's just a beautiful story, and I want to tell that. So I wrote that package in, I kid you not, 10 minutes. They are like, yeah, cool, sounds good. Brrr, easy, sent it off. Wrote the package, sent it off, didn't really hear anything back, and then was debating, like, should I follow up on this or not? I'm not really sure what the play is here, you know, because I don't want to seem too eager beaver, but I just wanted to know what was going on. And that's when I was like, am I going to this or not? Then follow up, because I was like, F it, YOLO. And they were like, oh yeah, of course, we're going to do that. I was like, oh, cool. So I voiced it. And this is just a couple of days ago now. Wheels go in motion, voice it, go to the event. Come to Montreal. Bring my family. By the way, have you guys been to the LaGuardia Airport? Holy
the new.
Shit.
Oh,
it's so I haven't
nice.
Been to LaGuardia.
The new one is so nice.
It is unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
What the hell? I knew they were renovating it. I didn't realize the whole thing was getting like this insane facelift. It's a different – it's a top three airport right now.
Oh, yeah.
It's not even just a facelift. They rebuilt the damn thing. Like, it's a completely new airport.
Far and away the best New York airport now.
It used to be a dump.
Newark. Yeah.
Newark
number close
two, pound
second.
For pound.
Though.
No, now close I would second. Say like LaGuardia. It's LaGuardia, and then 8, 9 is yes,
massive gap. Yes, massive gap in the Newark and JFK.
Can I ask about the delay? Like, So what were you thinking before the follow-up?
Oh.
Because it feels like it happened right before, like you follow up and then it's
how nervous were you getting?
Well, it's also just like, oh yeah, we're doing that. It's like, maybe I should know that. Maybe you could have told me that we're doing it.
I thought the powers that be hated it and were just like ignoring me. Yeah. I thought they hated it.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh,
it wouldn't be like,
no,
we're not doing it.
Yeah, I thought they hated it and like didn't have the heart to tell me it sucked. So I was like, fuck, I blew that. Because I really wanted, it meant a lot to me. Like I said, I love this city. I want to put the city back on the map. I went to all these events in Montreal. I freaking, like, it's the first thing I loved. I had all the toys, all the stuff that I talked about. So I was like, fuck, I blew it. Damn it. But then it.
Now, did you write it and send it to them? Or did you voice it and send it to them?
Yeah, because like if I go the step of voicing, it's a little bit weird. Just wrote the script. Yeah, a little presumptuous.
Yeah,
I didn't do that. That would be weird. That'd be like, you know, showing up to the party in this nice outfit and.
Yeah, but they now in hindsight they probably would have appreciated.
Yeah, but I didn't know if they liked it or not.
They didn't tell you, but they're already moving forward with it. Yeah, just take it.
I didn't know if they liked it.
Voice. We're doing it.
So here's the thing. I have had conversations in the past with WWE about doing stuff. In fact, I did the Extreme Rules package back in October, the one that DC was involved in. And I've said this, I think, on another show. I don't think I talked about it here. I wrote the packet. No, that one I didn't write. I did some tweaks, but they wrote that one. I voiced that one. And they were like, okay, yeah, cool. We'll pay you for this. And I said no, because, ever since the UFC thing and Fox back in the day, I have been very careful about working for any promotion. I don't care what it is. Glory has asked me to do things. PFL has asked me. Bellator has asked me. You know, I've been lucky enough and I'm always flattered and honored, but I just don't want any conflicts in my life. And when I did that, you know, I was talking to some people and they were telling me like, you're stupid. What is the issue here? And after some soul searching and thinking, came to the realization that I am not a wrestling journalist. I have never called myself a wrestling journalist. I don't report on wrestling like others do, day-to-day stuff, the beat stuff. I don't have a site. I don't have a show. I do interview wrestlers. I enjoy it tremendously. I try to think and act like a journalist when I do these interviews, but I am not a wrestling journalist. I obviously have relationships with people there because Nick Khan, CEO, was my agent, all that stuff. I can't hide from that. But, you know, so I wasn't sure which direction I should go here. What should I do? And then I came to the conclusion that in life, especially post ESPN, I just want to have fun. I just want to do fun things. I just want to, by the way, you know, pardon me for like bearing my soul to you guys here, but you know, this is the time to do it, I guess. So bear with me. I just want to have fun. I want to do fun things, you know, and you know,
let us hear
New York
it.
Rick in I particular, like I've been a fan. I was a fan. I wasn't a fan. I was in, I was out, but it's fun. It's different. And people tell me like they see the joy when I talk about it, right? I was watching with my kids. Yeah. It's sort of like when I talk about other things that I'm a fan of, right? The Bills, the Knicks, like these are fun things. MMA is the job and I love it, but we know how the sausage is made and there's some ugliness and all this stuff. So I came to the conclusion around December, like if an opportunity comes up again, I'm going to take it. Back when I started my like career post college, I actually spoke to Jeff Jarrett, who was running TNA, through a recommendation from Kurt Angle. About being a member of the creative team. This is before I was even doing, you know, any type of like MMA job. I was trying to figure out my life. And Jeff called me because he said that Kurt said that I reminded him of Brian Gewirtz, who was the longtime WWE writer, The Rock's right-hand man. I think it's just because we both went to Syracuse and went to Newhouse. But he put in a good word. It didn't work out. They wanted me to move to Nashville. I'm glad it didn't work out. But like this has always been a bucket list thing for me, like to work in the rest. Heelwani, this, that. What am I going to – like it's always been a bucket list thing for me. So I made a promise to myself without seeking it. If this opportunity came up again, I would seriously consider it. Because life is too short. I want to have fun. At the end of the day, I'm not working for a Bellator. I'm not working for a, like, I'll break the fourth wall. I don't give a fuck. Like, Bellator asked me to do something for the February 4th show. And, you know, they wanted me to host the presser and this and that. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that in MMA. You know what I mean? And even in boxing, like, I'm not a boxing guy, but it's closer to MMA.
MMA is the thing that I'm not going to break that rule. I will never break that rule unless I fully decide to like change everything and I'm going to go work for a promotion and, you know, take over. I'm not going to do it. I'm not a wrestling journalist. And I think that people are confusing me from my role in MMA to the role. It's not the same. All things aren't equal here, but fine. I get it. I interview guys. I'll mention things here and there. I'm not really a breaking news dude. So in any event, this opportunity comes up. It's Montreal. It's back home. It's an incredible story that's close to my heart. And I was just like, I'm not going to say no, because who am I saying no for? For some dude online who's going to tell me how to live my life, who has nothing to do with me, who couldn't give two shits about me. If I died today, he ain't showing up to my funeral. Or am I going to do this for me, for what makes me happy, for what gives me joy, for what, you know, gives me satisfaction? Back at home, 1991, I was at the Montreal Forum as a little kid watching this, playing with my toys. Like, what the fuck? Why am I going to say no to this? So I said yes. And this time I said, you know what? I am going to get paid. So just for everyone out there, you know, I am going to get paid. But the reason I didn't say it beforehand was because I didn't want to like ruin the surprise or whatever the fuck it was. I wanted it to be organic and fun. As of right now, I haven't been paid, but you get the point. You know, like I agreed to it. So unless they decide to not pay me because I sucked, which is fine. I might have been fired, but I will get to that in a moment. Anyway, so I voice the thing. I come to Montreal. When was it? Friday morning. And I go to the arena. And again, this is the Bell Center, which, by the way, crazy. First UFC event that I was credentialed for was UFC 97 at the Bell Center. It's like, it's amazing how Montreal is just always in my, you know, my orbit, right? Even when I'm gone. And so I come back, I go to the Bell Center. I'm kind of nervous. I had no idea what I was going to do. No idea. And I know that like this, like I'm a freaking tiny bit player in all of this. They've got a huge show. And I said to my wife, I'm just going to wear jeans and like my Nike SBs. And she's like, no, show up, you know, show up for the part. Like this is wrestling. This is your, so like get dressed. So I brought a suit, brought a couple of suits, but I brought like one just in case. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to show up, you know, dressed to impress. So I just showed up in my suit and not knowing what I was just coming to like, cause it's there. You know, I did my thing. I did the essay and I see someone there. I'm not going to say, you know, I'm going to, since I'm in the biz now, I'm going to keep kayfabe for a little bit. I see someone there who's like, whoa, what are you doing here? And I was like, oh, I'm just here, you know, just checking out the boys in the back. And he's like, this is a great thing. You're the Montreal guy. We're in Montreal. It's SmackDown. We need to let people know that this is a big deal for Montreal. You voiced that thing. That was great. But like, you're the man of the people. We need to put you in the crowd with the people and explain why this is a big deal and compare it from a sporting standpoint, because you're the sports guy, to GSP, to the Canadians. And I was like, you mean like on the actual broadcast? Like, I didn't know this is like 4 o'clock now. You know what I mean? Unbelievable. I was like, yeah, sure. I'd be happy to do that. Are you like, so that now all these things are running through my mind. Like, oh my God, on the broadcast, like, am I doing this? Am I really going? Am I going 2 feet in? Holy shit, this is nuts. That's all happening. I see Sami Zayn. The idea is kicked around like, oh, we spoke in San Antonio. So much has changed a month later. Let's do it again. We do a quick little sit. That's like all these things. And so now I'm getting everything that we've heard about backstage. I'm feeling it. And there's action and there's people. And I'm in this spot. And I'm seeing this familiar face and this person and that person. And hello. And oh, I saw your interview. I'm like, what is this? Is surreal shit. This is the type of shit that I don't care if you want to call me a fanboy, a mark. Like, I've always wondered what this world was like. And it was so much fun. It was so much fun to see it, to experience it, to see how the magic happens, to see this guy and they're doing this and talking about this. So it was amazing. And it was Bell Center. We're in an empty arena and I'm just seeing it. And it was just so much fun. And yeah, it was incredible. I get to do that. The show starts. They ask me what I'm going to say. They give me a lot of, you know, trust. I have to give a shout out to Paul Levesque, Triple H. Like, he's the guy who made this happen, who went to bat for me, who said yes to me on TV. Like, incredible. I don't care what anyone says about him. He's a mensch, salt of the earth guy, and very, very welcoming and kind to me. And I do the first hit, sends me a text, happy with it, great job. I'm feeling amazing. feeling incredible. Like, it was just so exhilarating amongst my people, right? Like, just it was surreal.
Yeah, describe the moment. Because if you haven't seen it, describe what's happening in the TV spot.
So they tell me at this point to do this. Like, I was texting you a little bit, I was just having so much fun. And I'm sorry, but there's like 90% of the stuff right now that I'm not telling you because I don't want to piss anyone off. But just please know that I was on cloud nine. Oh, by the way, can I just take a step back? My dad dropped me off at the arena. My dad, who I love dearly, who is an immigrant from Egypt, who used to get mad at me every time I would watch pro wrestling as a kid with my toys, when he would come down and see me watching The Undertaker. For some reason, he didn't like The Undertaker. He was like, "Why are you watching this? This is stupid. You're a smart boy. You shouldn't watch this stupidity." And I was like, "Dad, I love this stuff." And he would get mad, and it would get to the point where, like, I would hear his steps and I would change the channel. Like, I was like truly doing something bad just because I didn't want him to get mad at me.
But did it also make you want to watch it more?
I wasn't a defiant kid. I just didn't want the conflict. I didn't want him to be disappointed.
Yeah. You loved it, yes, and just didn't want him
loved
to be.
Loved it. I had all the toys. Anyway, the fact that my dad drove me and dropped me off, and I could tell very proud of me. I was like, "Dad, like..."
I was about to say, what did he say?
Well, he's met a few words, and we were talking about... So I was just like, "Man, 30 years ago, you were telling me not to play with this stuff. I'm going to work for WWE for one night only. Like, this is crazy. In Montreal, in our hometown, like where I was born.
Yeah.
This is crazy shit. I'm sorry. This is crazy shit." And
he was just like, "As long as the Undertaker's
he's
all cool. Good.
He was very proud. He's a big fan of Nick Khan's because he knows that, like, he helped me in my career. So, like, now it's a whole different thing. And
yeah, it means a lot yes, more to him now that it's exactly. personal and not just dudes.
And my
on
mom,
TV.
Of course, is 100% in support because she loves everything that I do. So I'm there. It's amazing. I'm getting a look at all of it. I feel bad. I have to say, okay, the other person was Paul Heyman. No one would be surprised. Watching him work backstage, like, I got a master class. I feel like I needed to pay him for this. He really helped me out and couldn't have been nicer. And just like little things, guys, can I just tell, like, he's telling me little things that I would never think of. And it's just, like, I was telling him what I would say. So to your point, the first one was, I was in this building for every single one of George St. Pierre's title defenses. And the atmosphere here is bigger than all of that. And Montreal is ready for a winner again and blah, 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 blah. And I was going over this with him and he's like, "A building is something you live in. That's your apartment. That's not special. That's not unique. You're in this arena. You're in this legend." And I was like, I would never think of that. But that's how Paul Heyman thinks, right? I mentioned belt. He's like, "A belt is something you put around your waist." He's going for the championship. And he's saying like this. I'm like, "You're incredible. I love all of this shit. This is amazing." Like, the psychology is just incredible. Yeah. So that's the first one that I do. And among the people, and by the way, in Montreal, I've never really felt the love because maybe it's the French thing or whatever. Everyone's like, "Iwani, what's going on? 10-7.
I feel like
everyone's shouting me out because no one, I guess, really expected me.
I feel like you're so excited right now that you're not properly setting the table here to explain. Like, you're not describing the scene. You're amongst a sea of people. Like, you're not talking about what actually happened. Amongst a sea of people.
They all
standing
come around
with the microphone.
"Like, what's going on?" Yeah, everyone's like, it's like a mosh pit. I'm on the floor live, and Michael Cole's gonna toss it to me, and I'm gonna say this thing that I kind of prepared, didn't prepare, and then I got a great piece of advice, like, don't go long, keep it short, sweet, simple. It's like, okay, don't go long, don't fuck it up, don't stumble on your words. And so the first one's great. You know, I compared it to GSP because that felt right. Fight Night, our guy, Montreal, compared it to GSP. Yeah.
Did you know that GSP would be there the next night when you
No, isn't that amazing?
Okay.
So that is the most amazing part. So that is great. Then I walk back. I go through Gorilla, which is crazy. Gorilla, by the way, GC, is like the spot where they all sit before you walk out. Like, this is like hallowed ground. I do not belong here. but this is like the spot before. And everyone talks about it. It's called Gorilla Position in honor of the late, great Gorilla Monsoon, who was a longtime play-by-play guy and was like one of the founding fathers of WWE. So they call it Gorilla in his honor. But this is like where all the magic happens, where Vince used to sit, where Triple H sit. And so I'm there. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? How is this happening? I've never been there before. I don't even know what to compare it to. Never been there before. And so I feel great. And I made a point to not look at my phone, not tweet it, not plug it, not promote it, not tease it. I just wanted to live in the moment. But then for a second, because I had like an hour, I did look at the phone because I just wanted to know if people were watching. I don't know. And I see this fucking tweet from Tony Khan. And I swear to God, I looked at it like three times and thought it was fake. I thought it was fake because, you know, anyone can have a blue check, right? I was like, there is no way. This guy doesn't follow me. Yeah. He's never tweeted me. There is no way that he actually tweeted this. Number one, proving that he was watching, A, which is bizarre. Why would you do that? Why would you put the competition over and show that you're watching some random SmackDown and a random moment in the telecast? Number two, putting down his own guy in the process, your guy, GC, the great Tony Schiavone, Atlanta sports legend, calling me a fraud and then saying that I am as much of a journalist as Tony Schiavone. Now I'm trying to think, like, what is the point that he is trying to prove here? He is trying to say that Schiavone isn't a journalist, which, by the way, correct me if I'm wrong, GC, as an Atlanta guy, doesn't he kind of have a little bit of respect as like a media dude? Like,
I never knew Tony Schiavone is the wrestling guy. That was later told to me. He used to come on the radio in Atlanta, and I was just like, Tony Schiavone. And then when I was like 16 or 17, that's when I found out. It's like, oh, yeah, he's massive in the world of pro wrestling.
But he has respect, right? People love him, admire him, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's not known as like a doofus.
No, definitely not a doofus. I mean, he was always mixed into like Atlanta news radio throughout my childhood.
News radio. So this guy's calling me a fraud, and then he's saying – Tony Schiavone is as much of a journalist as me. I guess so trying to imply that like he's not a real journalist and I'm not a real journalist.
I've had time to think about
this. In the process, please go ahead.
I've had time to think about this. What he's saying is Tony appears on our television show and he is presented as this interviewer. You are now equivalent. You are appearing on their television show and you are doing this. But the implication is that neither of you is journalistically sound. Now he's why take a shot at your own guy? I don't get it. It just doesn't make sense.
You could have said that in a million different ways, right?
That's the comparison. Is like on our show, you're equivalent to this level of interviewing that's happening on our show as well. This is my read on it after thinking about it.
I mean, the real thing he should have done was not say anything because number one, why are you putting over, you know, the competition's broadcast? Your show is coming up. Nice little cheeky hashtag there on the tweet as well. But like this shit, I mean, you talk about an own goal, and I know Fulham's having a bit of a better season. They certainly haven't had a great run with the Cons involved. But I mean, this was, you know, one of the all-time great own goals. And I just couldn't believe it. I really had to check multiple times. Was this really him? Now, to take a step back, he is still upset, clearly, over the fact that he gave me one of the all-time worst interviews and ignoring the fact that I have continuously praised the product ever since they launched around 3 years ago. It was just a bad interview, objectively a bad interview. Now, what's amazing about that interview is, you know, everyone loves to talk about, oh, he couldn't talk about this, he couldn't talk about that, legal this, legal that. First of all, like, where's the fucking legal, right? Where's the proof?
We've been waiting for a while on that.
Where's the proof? What legal are you guys talking about? You're going to compare this to this and that? Like, where's the legal? What is this investigation that you guys keep talking about? But I just want to let you all know very clearly that I had asked Tony multiple times to come on the show. I stopped asking because I was told that, you know, he wasn't sure. I'm Nick Khan's guy. I work for BT, which is ridiculous. That's just a broadcast partner. That would be like saying to someone like Mark Raimondi that he shouldn't interview Bellator guys because he works for ESPN and UFC is on ESPN. Stupid. Anyway, I just stopped asking. They reached out to me several months later and said, do you want to have Tony on? I was like, really? Cool. Never said, don't ask about this, don't ask about that. You don't think I was going to ask about these things? Anyone worth their salt is going to ask about these things. There was a million different ways that you could have answered those questions. But just to let you all know, at the time, I had no relationship with anyone, like in terms of business, anything like that. This was back in early October. So to now pin those questions on me appearing on SmackDown and all that stuff is a bullshit move because one has nothing to do with the other. He's just mad that he came off looking like a guy who didn't know how to handle these situations and only is comfortable promoting and talking on and on and on about a product when that's not really what the public wants to hear. And now he's trying to say, aha, look, this is why he asked me these questions, when it's all just silly bullshit, man. It's all just silly bullshit. And why do you care? Why do you really, really care? Like, all right, I said it was a bad interview. I've praised your product. Why are you so quick to run to your phone and tweet this in my moment? And so that's when I realized, I was like, old Ariel would have let this tweet and a guy like this bother him. I actually was like invigorated by it. I thought it was hilarious. And I was debating like, do I tweet something back now? Do I wait? Let me just chew on this. Let me get the second hit out of the way and then I'll deal with this. But the amazing thing was, is how the whole thing spread backstage. Everyone was, do you see the tweet? You see the tweet? You see the tweet? And like, I'm just I've just been here for 4 hours. Like, I don't even know a lot of these people. This is amazing. How could he have done? Was that really him? What a, you know, blah, 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 blah. I was like, well, yeah, I guess it was really him. He doesn't follow me, but I guess it was really him. And I still feel kind of bad for Tony Schiavone that he was insulted in the process. Bizarre. So then I go out. I do the second one.
Wait,
yes,
let me go ahead. Let me ask two things here. Wouldn't you say, like, the questions you were asking him in that ill-fated interview, wouldn't that be what journalism is? Wouldn't that be like the actual proof in the pudding of like what journalism is supposed to be?
He's no different than Dana.
PR.
You know, what I thought about tweeting back to him was, you know, Dana's not going to shag you, mate, because I know he's just trying to, you know, curry favor with his idol Dana White.
That should have been the one.
You know, I was thinking of that one, but I thought it might have been too much of a deep cut for the wrestling audience.
I think this was a little.
You know what I mean? But like, he's just trying to do that thing, and you know, it hasn't worked for Dana, and it ain't going to work for Tony Khan. I can assure you of that. What was it, New York Rick?
But by the way, that's what he should want that. To the point, like, he's a promoter. Like, that's what he should, like, he shouldn't be seeking journalistic integrity. Like, that's not what this program is. Anyway, my other thing is, isn't it kind of wild that, like, to your point, like, you've been there 4 hours, all the people in the locker room are talking about it, Tony Khan is taking this shot at you. Like, it's almost like you're not even like part of this world. You're not, like, you're dropped into
insanity.
It and it's like he's solely focused on you. He could have been watching that show, said anything about the wrestling, those guys suck, these guys suck. It's you specifically who are not related to this in any way.
Insane.
Except for this one night.
And for him to tweet that, how mad did he have to get, like, in his own home?
Yeah, he's probably pretty mad. That?
The funniest, the best part, and you touched on it, is the hashtag AEW Rampage after it. Like, no one's watching that, dude. Stop.
I wasn't sure if maybe he couldn't hear what I was saying. Maybe his connection was bad on his TV because it was snowing in Montreal. I don't know if it was snowing in Jacksonville. So I don't know if the connection was bad and he was like unclear about what he was seeing. I don't know. So that's why, you know, I wasn't sure, like, if his like DirecTV was off or something like that. It does happen. So then I get to the second hit. I'm among my people. I compare it to 1993, the banner, Canadians, you know, the sports guy, all this stuff. And it's freaking great. And now the thing is building and it's building and it's building. And I then leave and I'm feeling pretty good. All right. Everyone's like, all right, we'll see you back tomorrow. I was like, okay, I guess I'll be back tomorrow. I don't, you know, this is amazing.
It's like summer
incredible.
Camp. Like, you just got dropped off.
And again, I can't stress this enough.
Like, mom and dad,
old Ariel would have let this bother him. Old Ariel would have been down over this. Old Ariel would have been like reading the replies.
This being
the Tony thing. I was not going to let this fucking guy, this guy who has built an amazing thing, all credit to him, this kid who, you know, if it wasn't for his old man, wouldn't be. Let me tell you something. My dad gave me a lot, but as far as like MMA journalism and everything that I've built, that was all on me. That was all on me. All right. I'm very proud of what I built. I wasn't going to let this guy fucking soil my name, drag it through the mud, ruin my night. Montreal, a dream, a bucket list thing. And I know he's trying to get himself over on me because Lord knows he needs it. I wasn't going to let that happen. Absolutely not. And I could tell you a lot of other stuff about that interview that we didn't show, about how weird and bizarre that whole thing was. But I'm not going to do that, right? So then I'm in the car and I'm thinking, like, do I actually thought I wasn't going to reply, to be honest. But then I was like, fuck it. Helwani 10-7 all day, every day. So I just throw back that thing about, you know, thanks for watching.
What pushed you over? What was the moment?
I was in the car going back home. It was night. I was feeling good. And I was like, I'm not just going to let this slide. You know what I mean? No, you're not just going to call me a fraud and get away with it. And honestly, I felt bad for Tony. I felt like I needed, you know, Shivani. I felt like I needed to stick Shivani, up for my guy. I mean, come on, what a legend. And honestly, I feel like me and Tony Schiavone doing broadcasting together, I mean, I feel like that would put butts in seats. I feel like people would be into that. So that's a deep cut, by the way, from the old WCW days. Poor Tony Schiavone. And so I was feeling good, and then I tweet the thing, and then that explodes. And then the best part is all the freakazoids now come to, you know, Tony's defense and start to tell me about my career, about my life, about journalism, about this and that. Let me explain to you, because poor Dave Meltzer, I see, continuing to get compared to me. I am not Dave Meltzer. I have never claimed to be Dave Meltzer. I don't cover pro wrestling for a living. I don't have a wrestling show. I don't have a wrestling site. I don't have a wrestling newsletter. Why do you guys keep comparing me to this guy? Because I may be that guy in MMA? I've never been that guy in this sport. I interview, by the way, just let me tell you guys this. When I signed with BT Sport, the sole thing that I was hired to do mainly was UFC. Go back to the announcement. It was UFC. The problem was someone at the UFC, you know who, wasn't happy about it, threw a fit, went crazy, did all this stuff, and they were like, all right, well, I guess we can use him in WWE. That was never the plan. So and it's been great, and I loved it, and it kind of opened this, you know, thing in my brain, like, oh, I could do more of this. Point is, I've never considered myself a wrestling journalist. So I don't know why all of you are all up in arms. I'm having fun. I'm living my life. I feel sorry if you can't have this kind of fun. It was great. So I come back on Saturday, and I'm still like, I don't know. Am I doing this? Am I doing that? I find out GSP is going to be there. I know GSP. That's my guy. Text him. Hey, do you want to do a quick chat about this night, all this stuff? Yeah, for sure, bro. He's back there. Sami Zayn is back there. And it's like, what am I doing here? One of these things is not like the other. How did I end up here? I'm just the kid who was sitting in the 400s. I was the kid who was watching GSP against Matt Serra on his couch. Now I'm in the room with him and Sami Zayn. Like, this is insane. Old me wouldn't embrace this. Old me would worry about what other people think. I'm fucking living my life and having a blast and not breaking any fucking rule that you guys want to impose on me. Fuck off. Then they say, you're going to sit out in the crowd and we're going to do like this celebrity shot with you and GSP. I'm like, why am I in the shot? I don't deserve to be here. It's fucking GSP. No, no, no. You go out there with him. And so like we do that thing and it's like, look who's here in the crowd. Now, I'm not listening to the broadcast. Take a step
that
back.
That was my favorite part. That was my favorite part.
Michael Cole, freaking legend that he is, sees me before the show and says, just wait until you hear how I introduce you. I think he's going to say combat sports reporter, this, that, or the other, whatever. I was like, cool. Thanks, man. Thanks for putting me on. Do the hit. I'm trying to put over GSP. Crowd's going nuts. Fucking GSP is like asking me questions. I'm like, what am I doing here? This all feels like an out-of-body experience. Go to the back, and then my phone explodes because of what Michael Cole said. Michael Cole references, says something to the effect of, oh, and there's the unbiased journalist, Ariel Helwani, who's going to hit
world-renowned,
hit you with the hard questions, whether you want to answer them. And I was like, what is going on? This is like 1999, Monday Night Wars, and I'm in the middle of it?
You're the middle.
Yes. What is going on here? And everyone's going nuts over this. Like, I'm getting high fives in the back. I'm like, I didn't do anything. This is incredible. So it was just... yeah, it was just nuts. Then I went in the back and pretty much just watched the rest. I went out for the Sami Zayn match. Bummed that he lost.
What do you make of that? Yeah. Give us your thoughts on that match.
First of all, like, guys, the crowd was unbelievable. It was deafening. It was unbelievable.
Like, when I asked earlier about, like, had they been back, I was the low number kind of shocked me because, like, why wouldn't you go back there? That crowd looked insane. And
they're the best.
The enthusiasm. It's just, it came through the TV, I'll tell you that.
They are the best, and especially for one of their own. It felt like a GSP title fight back in the day. It really did.
It looked like it.
They didn't touch for 5 minutes. The ups and downs, KO comes out. I really think he should have won. Here I am saying it. I think he should. Oh my God.
he's not going to be critical. I think he should have won. I think there was a way.
You should.
I think there was a way to make him win. We want moments in life. Like, I remember when Mick Foley won in Worcester, Massachusetts. He has no connection to Worcester, and I still remember it. And he was running around the – by the way, funny thing is, Schiavone was connected to that moment because, for those that don't know, Tony Schiavone was live on WCW Monday Nitro. They had taped Monday Night Raw the week before with Foley winning, and he
– spoiled
about
it.
An own goal. He said, GC, on the broadcast, we want to let you all know that Mankind Mick Foley is about to win the WWE – championship or WWF championship on the other show. Don't bother changing the channel. Why? Oh, because that guy's a bum. That'll really put butts in seats. What ended up happening? Everyone changed the channel and went to go see Mick Foley win. So it completely backfired on them. And now here he is, like, somehow tied to all of this. Fucking surreal shit. Anyway, I wish he would have won. I think there was a way to make him win and then go to WrestleMania and all this stuff. But, you know.
But this is the problem. They have the fight that's after this. I mean, I say fight.
Yeah,
I don't know. The match that's after this already determined who's going to be in it. So that's
split
the problem,
belts.
Right?
You could have done one night Sammy Roman rematch. You could have done Cody in the second night. You could have done a triple threat.
Split the belts, meaning he like he belts. Wins yeah. only one yeah. belt of the two. Of yeah, I guess so.
And then yeah. Sammy ends up with
you need
one
the
belt. Cody ends up with the other.
Fuck.
And we have Montreal yes. and Atlanta ruling.
Yeah, that's WWE.
Come
that's,
over now.
That's,
you're on Raw. Man. I'm on SmackDown. We're both fucking
you too.
Chills.
That's the dream.
Oh my god.
You being in the middle of the new Monday Night Wars, I did not anticipate, but it's pretty incredible.
Okay, I have to say this. So obviously, I'm traveling right now for a friend's wedding. So I'm also staying with people that none of them are into the WWE world. So I wasn't able to tune into any of this. But when I saw the clip that got cut off of you in the middle of the crowd, I was like, what is going on right now? I was like, this is so ridiculous. Like, this is not what, when you said you were going to Montreal to do
me
this,
too.
This is the last thing I was expecting. I was expecting what you were saying, doing some interviews, doing the voiceover for the, you know, welcome back to Montreal WWE. You being in the crowd, getting the lower third,
me
GSP
too.
The next night, like none of this, like I was dying laughing when they sent
it. It was wild. Honestly, after the voiceover thing, like I was good. That thing was pretty well received. Like I was very content. I felt good about it. I felt like I did my part. I felt like I told the story. And then all this stuff was gravy. By the way, my dad dropped me off on Saturday too. And so that was wild also. I'll just say that one of the things that I tweeted, as they say in the business, I popped the boys in mm-hmm. the back. So many people came up to me. It was like, that was freaking amazing. And it was just great. Like all of a sudden I felt like I was a part of the team. I was just there for, you know, a week.
Kind of by default now part of the team. You have to be, right?
And fuck it. I have no problem.
I just don't.
And I want to.
What?
I just want to reiterate to all the people. If I disappointed you by doing this, I don't give a fuck. I am not a wrestling journalist. I am not. I may die tomorrow, and I could forever say that I got to do that. And if that bothers you, if that makes you feel any differently about my interview with Cody or my interview with Triple H or my interview with Paul Heyman or my interview with MJF, yeah. who I still think is the best thing right now, or my interview with Daniel Bryan or Thunder Rosa, fine. Go watch someone else. I don't care. I'm not going to live by these bizarro rules that you people want to make for me. And if you don't like it, that's fine. Just watch something else. But I'm going to freaking take these opportunities, and I'm going to, after all the shit sandwiches that I've had to eat over the last 10 years, and there's been great moments, but there's been a lot of shit sandwiches, I'm going to have fun. I'm going to have fun. And if I'm not breaking any rules, if I'm not, you know, doing anything that I'd be ashamed of, that I can't talk to my kids about or look at myself in the mirror about, I'm going to do them. And so just to be clear, that's it for me. Like, I'm not a new employee. That's it. I'm done. I left. I said, thank you. That was it. I may just have been the Montreal guy. This may have been a one-night stand and great, or a two-night stand and great. And I have zero regrets, and I loved every second of it. If they come back and we talk about something else, would I be open to it? If it makes sense, I don't think necessarily me being like a character is the right move. I don't even know. But I would consider anything. But I just want to let you all know so that you can, you know, rest easy at night. I am done. Tony, I am done. If you want to talk about maybe, you know, me helping out the product and cutting, you know, I'll show up on Dynamite for the right price, Tony. I'll shoot over there too if you want. No problem.
I was just about to say, you said you're open to an offer from WWE. Maybe AEW comes knocking at your door.
You want me to be bought and paid for? Let's start printing out the fraud t-shirts right now. I'll fucking lean all the way in. I don't give a fuck.
I don't understand.
Unbiased. What do you want me to say? Biased?
I truly can't.
Converse how wanted for the
age. Why is it so hard for people to grasp that you're not a wrestling journalist? Why is that difficult? It seems very easy on its face.
I don't know. I think it's because they see the interviews and they're like, oh, you're acting as one. But like, I don't report on the news. Like, I'll get a press release that SummerSlam is going to Detroit. And I'll write per WWE press release. But I'm not breaking news. I refuted the Saudi Arabia thing.
But even if you were. You're not.
I don't know.
It's not. It's not your job, and it's not. What is compromised in this scenario? I just don't understand.
The best part about it. Anytime I tweet something about pro wrestling, it's like, oh, this is fake. This is entertainment. You know, this is bullshit. This is not sports.
Now it's real. Now it's all real.
How dare you? How dare you? How dare you do this? Like, they're acting like I went to work for the UFC. And by the way, even if I did, like, okay, there I am. I'm working for the UFC. Like, I remember there was a great Lee Jenkins, a great writer for SI.
He Sports went to work for
the,
yeah.
The Clippers. There was another guy who also went to work from ESPN.
Hollinger went to the Grizzlies.
This is life, man. This is life. So I'm telling you now. The reason I didn't tell all of you before is because I didn't know what I was doing, and I didn't want to ruin anything, okay? Now I'm telling you all right now. That was a one-weekend thing. It was all good. No regrets. Bought and paid for. And now I'm a free agent again. So if NWA wants to hit me up, I'll be the hottest free agent in pro wrestling. NWA, let's have a bidding war for my services. But I will say I like those guys very much, and it was great to work with them, like Paul and Nick, obviously, who I have the relationship with. So I'm sorry if that bothers all of you that I'm saying that, but it was incredible. It was legit one of the top 10 best weekends of my life.
It sounds like it, dude. It sounds like a full circle moment. It sounds like dreams realized. So I'm happy for you, man. I'm glad that you enjoyed it.
Thank you.
I'm very happy for you. Good for you. F the wrestling.
Yes. F them, man. Live
but
your life.
Here's
dude.
My question for you. I need a percentage, right? I need a percentage adding up to 100. The two options are work, shoot. I need 100% of a full pie. How much of your now Tony Khan feud is work, and how much of it is shoot?
Oh, wow. See, you're now being a very good journalist by asking this. No, this is not a work. Are you kidding me?
100 is the answer. Shoot. I mean, listen, it's a shoot, brother.
Tony wants to shoot. He's looking for a foil. He has tried to pick a fight with the biggest name in combat sports and wrestling media. He has tried to pick a fight with me. And so I'll say to Tony, I'm sorry about your Jaguars. They shat the bed against the Chiefs. I'm sorry that Fulham is a mid-tier club. And yes, you beat Nottingham Forest a couple of times this year, but guess what? 23 years, not in the Premier League. We'll get you back, no problem. I'm sorry that it seems like a lot of people say things about you. I wasn't one of those guys. In fact, I have praised you and your product multiple times. I went to Dynamite in Queens. I don't know what you're so upset about. Are you so upset because I asked you a few questions and you didn't answer them correctly? I don't know. But, you know, like I've said time and again, you come at the king, you best not miss. And once again, he missed. Just like all of them. And let me tell you guys all something. I've had to deal with the likes of Dana White. I mean, if you think I'm afraid of, you know, big bad Tony K, I'm not. I'm just not.
Speech at AEW in Queens didn't put fear in your heart?
When he was on his knees and stuff?
Yeah.
No.
Legendary speech.
No.
That was my introduction to Tony K.
I know. I've never met the guy. And I, you know, prior to in person, prior to that conversation.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Never.
I thought y'all knew each other.
No. I don't know what his thing is. I think he's probably trying to like be tough like Dana and all this stuff. But thank you for the tweet, man. Honestly, thank you. It was great. I think it helped me out. And thank you to everyone who's been tweeting up a storm about me and all upset, ruining your weekend. I loved every minute of it. It was fantastic. And thank you to WWE for having me. And thank you to GSP for letting me hang with them. And Sammy was incredible. And everyone in the back. And Paul Heyman and Paul Levesque and Bruce Pritchard and Kevin Dunn. I'm saying these names and I can't believe I'm talking about myself. I can't believe. And it was in Montreal. Like, you talk about an out-of-body experience in Montreal. How the hell did this happen? So
I don't think it would have meant. I don't think it would have.
No, if we were in Detroit, reached or these Atlanta, levels.
If it was in, yeah, some great. Random American,
it would have been awesome. But I'm in the freaking Bell Center. I'm seeing the Canadiens logo there. I saw like one of my high school classmates in the crowd when I was there. Legit.
That's crazy.
That's perfect. I saw a girl and a guy that I went to high school with, and they're like, Ariel. I'm like, what the hell? So other people that I know were sending me pictures like, what are you doing here? I don't know. This is amazing. I have no idea. All the people backstage couldn't have been nicer. Like the people who work for WWE. I saw a bunch of the, you know, the talent. Everyone is, I couldn't stop thinking about like how much fun this all was and how welcoming everyone was and how it honestly feels like a big family. I saw Logan in the back. We were talking about Volk and him being in Australia. We were talking about Jake and the fight coming up. It just felt like a family, and everyone's like working, you know, because.
Wait, was Logan in the show?
Yeah, he showed up.
I might have missed that.
Was Elimination Chamber, and he did? Cost Seth Rollins in an incredible sequence. So they're probably going to, it's clearly going towards WrestleMania.
Jeez, that guy.
He was amazing.
He's another one who's just living the dream like you. Like he's just inserted into this thing, doing it. Like a rocket ship.
It was
ship.
Great.
Is GSP a
the
fan?
GSP part,
or was he just there because it was the biggest thing in
Montreal? It was something that he was. So you know, GSP and Nick know each other from the CAA days, and he was invited to Montreal. He doesn't really go out to a lot of events, you know, because he'd be, you know, Nick Khan.
Yeah, that is.
He would be swarmed, but he was just a fan with some friends. Had done his, like he's such a pro. He told me he didn't really watch, you know, the product, but like he did his research, so he was aware. We did an interview. It was so cool being in the back, Sammy meeting him, and just seeing how much it meant to Sammy that GSP would be there to watch him, to support him.
I assume Sammy, in the other way, is a fight fan,
but he definitely knows him, and he knows boxers. Yeah, of course.
GSP, like, of course.
Like legit Montrealer. Like everyone knows GSP here. So like, and GSP's royal, all the security guards coming up to him, and it was great. And then they say, okay, he's going to go sit. You sit next to him. We're going to put you on camera. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I've seen this celebrity shot before a million times. You want me there? Yes, of course. And so I'm sitting there with him for the Brock and Bobby match, and we're talking about it, and we're sitting in the front row. And I was like, what the hell? I'm sitting next to GSP in Montreal, front row, watching Brock. We're about to be on camera. Listen, man, we only get one life. And if you can't enjoy these things, then, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm going to freaking enjoy, especially after the last few years, I'm going to enjoy them. And I'd be lying if I said, like, I didn't want to do this again because I freaking caught the bug, if you get what I'm saying, right? Like,
yeah.
The wheels
what
were turning.
What a good one to start
I
on.
I could do that.
Although maybe how does it go up from here is a you know relevant question
like,
to ask.
Is this the pinnacle? Is this
you started at the damn top. Do you think they put you on that celebrity shot?
Oh, you think
a little bit of a knife? I mean, it doesn't hurt when all of a sudden somebody we literally have in our building is in the biggest feud in pro wrestling right now.
Which then goes to show again how he helped me. Like, you helped me, man.
Oh, I think he helped you big time.
You helped me. I wish he, I mean, for his own sake, didn't do that because, like, it's again, every time they come at me, it backfires. I don't get it. Yeah. I don't get it. I don't get why he did that. I will never get why he did that. And certainly don't. I think Frank sent us the screen grab of the, it was very much like Happy Gilmore. Like, hey, you know, you eat pieces of shit like for me, like breakfast. What is it? You eat pieces of shit like me for breakfast. What is it again?
I eat pieces of shit like you for breakfast. You eat pieces of shit for breakfast.
There you go, Rick.
Fuck, I killed it. I fucking botched that big time.
that's okay. You did all right this
weekend. I'm still buzzing. My head is still spinning.
I mean, you have to be.
I mean, you're literally still there. You're still in Montreal.
I don't know how you couldn't be buzzing. And then you do all this. Your dad drops you off at the arena. And now you're recording this in your in-law's house where you used to visit your now wife when you were younger. It's just like the ultimate full circle nostalgia moment that you could ever experience.
Yes.
Like, you couldn't have like scripted it better.
No, I couldn't have.
A real journalist would have passed on that. That's all I have to say about that.
Whatever.
You know?
Yeah.
A real wrestling journalist would have never done
That's the best part. It's like, fuck,
wrestling journalist.
I guess I'm off real sports now, right? Isn't that the best part? It's like these dudes calling me a fraud, and I'm like, I'm on like the number one most respected sports journalism show, like with a story coming up soon. In America, in North America, I don't know. It's like, oh, he's not a real wrestling journalist. Okay. Actually, looking at some of y'all, I don't want to be one. All right. There's some that I like. Shout out to John Pollock, Wei Ting. You know the ones. But like, I'm okay with not being a part of that fraternity, guys. All good. Thank you for the support and love. So anyway, it was wild. Did I explain it well enough?
God
did
bless.
I do a good job? Okay.
I think we did good. I think we did good here. We started a little rocky. I think you had too okay. much swirling around in there where you're just overloaded. Yeah,
we got there.
And
am
we
I
got
gonna
there.
Get to post the bloopers of the you know,
no, no. The no, intro. No. No.
I can't.
No, we're good.
You did a fantastic job. As someone that wasn't able to watch any even 1 minute of Elimination Chamber, I now feel like I got the full.
You
got to
go back and watch.
Now I want to go back and watch the highlights.
Watch the match. 40 minutes.
It was pretty good. I enjoyed it. I only saw the main. I only saw the Sami and
this Roman was the first time in a long time where I was like, I need to write some of this shit down, because like I said, I'm only telling you guys 20% of the story. There's so much that I saw and experienced and witnessed. I was just like, wow, this is, how did I get so lucky?
This is definitely going to be a good chapter in Highway to Helwani. I'm looking forward to reading this one back.
Yes, this is chapter, I don't know what it is. I mean, first, what should I call it? Fraud? Should I call it that?
Yeah,
the Montreal fraud.
The Montreal fraud.
That's pretty good.
We had the Montreal screw job. Now we got the Montreal
That's
fraud.
That's not chapter bad.
Chapter 27.
Yo.
That'll be the audiobook.
Yo,
can't
hit up Laquan real quick. Can you hit up Laquan real quick to print those shirts? The Montreal fraud.
Shout out. I'm sure that'll be done in no time. We'll get that on the show as soon as we get the spirits out.
Unbiased. Oh, Michael Cole. What a legend.
That was a hell of a promo, Michael.
Amazing. Wow. All right. I think we're good.
Yeah, I think so too. Can I quickly break the fourth wall? I'm the host of this meeting here, and my battery has...
Wait, I have to say goodbye. Oh, your battery's about to die?
No. That's what I wanted to say. I know you have to say goodbye. I just have to quickly break down how I've been internally freaking out this entire time, because my battery has been dwindling like quickly. Even after plugging it into a charger, it's still dwindling. I'm at 4% right now. But I think it looks like we're going to make it. It looks like we survived. But I was having an internal crisis.
Why don't we just hop off right now? Yeah.
Yes. Okay. This has been incredible. Thank you so much. You can hit my music. Appreciate everyone. If it's not already playing, appreciate everyone who watched. And we're going to be back on Wednesday. And let me just say this. Massive, if it all comes together, and I think it is, massive in-studio guest. I don't want to jinx it. Massive in-studio guest on Wednesday's show. So stay tuned for that. We'll be back in the studio. Who knows what's going to happen between now and Wednesday? Maybe someone else is going to try to take me down and call me all kinds of names. I'll be ready for it, baby! It has been fun. I appreciate you all. I hope you don't feel like we shortchanged you by doing this. But, you know, truth be told, we could just not done the show, you know? So I feel like you should kind of be thankful that we did this. I thought it was one of Frank's better performances on the program.
Sure.
I thought he did a great job. I thought he was very...
he says
he's just writing all kinds of stuff.
So quickly. He responds so quickly to everything. Yes. I think we got 87 slacks throughout this.
I know GC's computer is about to die and we're going to lose all this, but...
We're all right. We got time.
Frank, first one to text me to say welcome back to the Parlay Pals, actually. Offline text. He said, welcome back, you know... Don't know what happened with Connor there, but
of course. Yeah,
welcome back. Welcome back to the Parlay Pals. I made that up. It wasn't real.
Okay, now I'm getting way too nervous. Thanks for listening. GC, New York Rick, Mysterious Frank. Back on Wednesday, same time and place. Until then, we say peace. We're out of here.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.